across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is the 40th edition of The Unexplained. Boy, when I started this a few years ago, I never thought we'd get to 40 editions or even four, but wow, I've learned so much in this period about how you record, about how you disseminate information, and about simply using the internet as a way of communicating. I never really understood even a fraction of it when I started this, 4 years ago now. Progress at times has been slow. I've had a lot of learning to do, and boy, have I learned those lessons. Now I think we're in pole position to do something really big. Thank you for the superb feedback which continues to come in every day from every corner of the globe. Please tell your friends about this website and this show. There are new ways that we have of reaching you. In the last edition, we launched our new iPhone section, which means that if you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you can download these shows, all of them, to your device. That's a new thing. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot, my wonderful web guy, for designing that so quickly and for making it happen. So try that out if you have those devices. Please keep your emails coming. Had some really nice ones, as ever. The traffic of emails increases all the time, so I'm very, very pleased about that. I've got a newsletter to write. We'll do that very, very soon. I've a few things to tell you there, so that'll be coming to you on email. If you have not registered for the newsletter, please do so now. You can do that on the front page. Which brings me to this. We are a totally independent show. We are not produced by any big conglomerate, corporation, anything like that. We are just us. Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, my web guy. You, who listen. Me, who researches and does the shows. If that's not grammatically incorrect, I think it is probably, but you know what I'm saying. And the man who did our theme tune, Martin. That is the sum total of the people involved in The Unexplained. It is a one-stop shop. If we were selling things, then you could say we cut out the middleman. We deal direct. You know, we're almost like one of these discount warehouses in the UK. We deal direct with you. That makes us flexible, but it also makes us independent editorially and spiritually, if that makes any sense as well. Which is why your donations to this show are so vitally, vitally important. I can't do the show without them. I can't say that I'm, as we say in the UK, flush with money at the moment, because I certainly am not. So, in order to keep the work going, and in order to do the things that I really want to do with this, and that I know you will enjoy, I need to get your donations. So please go to the front page of the website. If you're able to make a donation, please make one through the PayPal link. And if you're not able to make a donation, please just enjoy the show. That's the way I've always wanted this to work. Didn't want to start charging for shows. I don't think that's a model that works. I never have. I don't think it ever will work. But I think the idea of donating is something that works really well for national public radio in America. So let's see if it can work for us. So far, we've been doing okay, but we need to get more donations coming in. So if this show is valuable to you, if you like it, if you think it's any good, please make a donation. The guest this time is the representative of a man called Billy Meyer. You might have heard this name already, and in fact, the suggestion to do the Billy Meyer prophecies came from one of my listeners. You know who you are. Thank you very much for that good suggestion. We're going to be talking to Michael Horn in the United States. But just to lay the groundwork and the foundations a little bit about this, Billy Meyer, man in Switzerland, who allegedly received a series of prophecies from extraterrestrials. And you know what I'm going to say? Some of those prophecies came right. It is claimed. Now, all of these things have to have a great big government health warning on them, as we say here in Britain. You know, there have to be a lot of caveats in there. And the Billy Meyer prophecies have at times been derided. They've been debunked by people like James Randi and others. But they're still out there after, what, 4 decades or so now? So let's get on to Michael Horn now in the United States, Billy Meyer's representative, and ask him to explain. Michael Horn, thank you for coming on The Unexplained.
Great. My pleasure.
Nice to have you on. And I just think it's amazing these days with the miracles of digital technology, we can hook up like this and don't have to bother with old-fashioned crackly phones. Because sometimes if you go to West Coast USA from the UK, it's a little bit of Russian roulette. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. This is good, though.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
All right. Listen. If you can hear me nice and clear, we can get into this fascinating story. Now, I have to tell you, Michael Horn, that the Billy Meyer prophecies and the information and facts, in inverted commas, surrounding those, I've been aware of those for a while, and I honestly can't tell you why I haven't actually got round to doing this before now, but I'm glad that one of my listeners suggested we did this. Tell me, in your own words, why you think we ought to be talking about this now.
Sure. That's a great, concise question. Let me see if I can nail the answer and do, do it some justice. I would say this. In my opinion, Meyer has proved to be simply the single most prophetically accurate human being who's ever lived. His material is far and away just impeccably accurate. When they predict something, and they also, there are prophecies, and the distinction being the prophecies are things that are foretold will occur if changes are not made in time, which means they are still somewhat plastic, changeable. Predictions are things that are set in stone and that are going to occur with certainty, or so it's said. In terms of the Meyer material, a lot of what I'm calling prophetically accurate information wasn't presented to him as if they were prophecies or predictions, as such, except they were conversationally explained to him as things that were going to happen, be discovered, occur, whatever. There are times when Meyer has been specifically given, or himself published, very specific prophecies or predictions, and they are kind of designated as such. In the case of the conversational content, it attracted my attention, and I pulled out numerous examples of things that were stated to, that were going to occur, and I was able to determine accurately the date that they were published by Meyer, searched them out, and found out that they had all occurred subsequent to the publication, I should add, and that the details were precisely as they were, foretold, and that in all of this first batch of about 60 that I went through, all of them were first announced by Meyer with the exception of one. So I think that when you have that foundation of credibility, it really behooves interested and concerned people to at least pay attention to the information.
All right. Well, that's what we're doing now. And I'm glad that we're, as I say, I'm glad that we're doing that. We've got to get into this, though. Who is Billy Meyer?
Yes, a good question. Billy Meyer is, as of our conversation today, a 73-year-old Swiss man. He has one arm. He lost his arm, the left arm, in 1965. He claims that ever since he was a 5-year-old boy living in rural Switzerland, that he has been having ongoing contacts with human beings from another star system, and in one case, from a separate universe, actually.
With human beings?
Absolutely, fully, unmistakably human beings.
So are they us?
No, not. It's not as if we're being told that, they are our future selves or anything like that. The context here is that, according to this information, our universe is teeming with life, human life, and other forms of life as well, but at this point, with literally billions of other races of human beings. Now, not all of these, purported races are space travelers, but a certain number are. And we're also told that for millions of years, millions, human beings have been coming and going to and fro this planet. And that in some cases we have benefited or have been greatly hindered by that we are connected, in some cases, to other human beings who came here, and some who stayed here or were stranded here, what have you, did raise up civilizations, and which also eventually crumbled and fell and all that. So we are talking about fully human beings, and your question indicates something that I think will be common interest to a lot of people, because there is so much disinformation around the whole idea of quote-unquote aliens that we have been presented for a very long time with caricatured versions of what beings from outer space would look like and be like. And this has been quite deliberate and it originated very, well, relatively speaking, long ago in our contemporary.
Hold on. Is this then, you think, the biggest conspiracy theory of all time, where we've had these visitations from people who are basically just like us, and they've been going, as you said, to and fro for a very, very long time, but somebody somewhere doesn't want us to know that, so they've created myths about Greys and Nordics and all the other kinds of aliens we keep reading about? Is that right?
I'd say that's a good portion of the answer is, as you just stated it, yes. This had its origins in contemporary times in the First World War, but a lot of the other earlier, let's say, evidence may not have been so deliberately covered up all the time. In some cases it was, but it was also that people didn't have a context for this. So several thousand years back, when someone sees a flaming shield or chariot in the sky, or a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, or says that the glory of the Lord lifted up from the center of the city and moved and set down on the far eastern mountain or whatever, these were the best descriptions given by people who had no reference point whatsoever for technology. They didn't have bicycles or flashlights, and yet they were seeing phenomenal craft piloted by beings who took full advantage of the awe and fear and confusion of the relatively primitive Earth people. And lo and behold, voila, just add water, we have religion.
Okay, well, that's controversial in itself, really. Even more controversial than all of that, though, is why would a bunch of us who'd come back here from somewhere else make contact with a guy who is now 73 in Switzerland? Why would they not go to the United Nations?
Sure. Well, there are some good answers for this. Well, let's put it this way. There are some answers that people can mull over and decide for themselves how good they may be. In order to fully answer that fairly, we'll have to stretch this out a little bit more chronologically and informationally, you know, kind of expand this file. So the context, as it's related and presented in the Meyer material, can be evaluated in this regard. And here it is. It is said that humans on Earth have had a good deal of, let's say, grief inflicted upon them that they actually don't even know about, and that wasn't their slash our fault. And what we're talking about here is this, and believe it or not, it's all connected to why Billy Meyer. It is said that a couple tens of millions of years ago, human beings who were quite advanced, living in the system of Sirius A and B, the stars deep in the night sky there, had already been the space travelers and heir to, you know, space traveling ancestors. They were developing themselves quite positively. And they made a mistake, and their mistake was that they genetically engineered out of themselves, rather, not only all their aggression, but even their fighting spirit. And in so doing, they made themselves attractive to, vulnerable to, attacks from more aggressive space-traveling races. So this, you know, we're a little bit into the, you know, Star Wars kind of environment here with this. They quickly got about doing some genetic manipulations on the human race so that this race would be amped up in terms of aggression, violence, and the will and desire to fight. And simultaneously, they made one other little modification. They toned down considerably the genetic determinant for their lifespans, which means that they cranked them down to 100 years or less when they, these Syrian overlords, if you will, were living 1,200, 1,500 years or more. But they did that because in creating a very willingly violent, aggressive, fighting warrior race, they also knew that should this race have the same lifespans that they did, that they'd be out of business after they had, you know, taken care of the attackers, they would turn, you know, their energies against their overlords here. So what happened was...
So this was built-in obsolescence then?
That's right. Built-in obsolescence.
Right.
And what I should do is just fast forward a little so I don't, you know, take all the time telling the tale. Suffice it to say they served their purpose. They were going to be eliminated by their Syrian overlords. However, one faction of that group thought that was a pretty unspiritual thing to do, took huge numbers of them in great ships and fled from that system in clever ways technologically so it would be very hard to follow. They end up in a whole other galaxy. They find a solar system at the end of a spiral arm of one of those galaxies and plop themselves down in three different planets. One was called Melona. We know the other two is Mars and Earth. And one thing led to another. The people in Melona got used their aggression to fight amongst themselves over time, developing great weaponry. They blew their planet apart. We now have what's called the asteroid belt. Thank you very much. Mars suffered a kind of cosmic catastrophe when a destroyer comet came through and tumbled and turned everything topsy-turvy on Mars, and those who could flee and survive ended up on Earth. And we're going back, you know, many tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of years with this stuff. However, everybody on Earth has inherited the two gene manipulations, meaning the higher aggression and or the propensity for it, and the shorter lifespan with the built-in obsolescence, degenerative disease factors, and what have you, which our scientists will eventually find. They're on their way to it already with the aging gene, and they will rectify these things, and it will have to be done before we go into space. Now, what happens is we have a planet going back quite some time where the inhabitants that are growing in numbers either from the descendants of the ones who are already the genetically manipulated ones or others who come and there's interbreeding. And, you know, finally, we have a world where basically everybody has inherited these manipulations. Now, not everybody is violent and crazy, although we can see there's quite a few people that, given, you know, a slight nudge, are more than willing to go off the handle varying degrees of impact on the world, whether it's attacking an individual or blowing up things in wars and what have you.
So that you're saying that the fact that we have in this world, you see enough of it in America, gunmen and terrorists and bad guys and mass murderers and that kind of stuff is directly down to a modification that was done to us.
Well, it is in the sense that the propensity for this type of behavior has been greatly enhanced, to use a bad euphemism maybe, but and let's face it, in other countries, the UK, they took away the guns, so there's a lot of knife crime. It's the idea that these urges to violence and aggression and crime and all of that are overly imbued to human beings through this modification. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have and haven't had, you know, throughout our history, wonderful, peace-loving people, creative, loving, tender, charitable, and all that, because we're human beings. And the one thing that was not done to our distant ancestors in this regard was the goodness and the evolutionary characteristics and genetic components were not destroyed or tampered with, making us, you know, hopeless criminals and barbarians.
All right, so in other words, the propensity to be better than all of that was always within us, and over these years that we've been left to our own devices, more or less, with visitations from time to time, we've been evolving out of that. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
trying to evolve out of that.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And, you know, there's a struggle. The struggle is quite pronounced in our world because we happen to have a pretty strong dose of, you know, of the negative element within us. Now, how does that bring us Billy Meier? Well, there's quite a bit of history, and it is documented, you know, on my website. You can read a lot more information about all these aspects. But long ago, it was determined that by another race that also was being mentored by an even higher race, that the people of Earth needed to get straightened out and to have truth brought to them, to have true spiritual teaching brought to them, because all of this stuff with these overlords and starting with the Syrians and other quote-unquote gods who'd appeared here over time had created another propensity in human beings, which was the irrationality of religion, whereby a deity, an anthropomorphic being, and sometimes beings, were the lords and masters over human beings. This not being true according to the spiritual teaching in the case, which is said to be quite ancient, and meaning that according to this teaching, there is something called the creation, which is, in effect, also this universe, the consciousness that has created and sustains everything within itself, within this universe, within this intelligence, is supported and created by it, and it's an impersonal, all-creative force. It is one universe among countless billions. We have no concept of any of this, of course, and we don't need to believe it. It's just we're kind of trying to flesh out a little information. The teaching of creation, the teaching of spirit, of truth, and of life, is said to be the eternal teaching of this creation, meaning guidelines, not punishments, not fear-laden, admonitions that you are going to be, dipped in molten lava once you die if you haven't done this, worshiped that, prayed to this, performed that ritual, mumbled these prayers, etc. That is the man-made version of spirituality, which has been chunked down into religion. This is, this is stated in as many words here and there and many more in this material.
So you're saying that a bunch of beings out mm-hmm. there who are part of us and came back to us or to Billy Meyer were so peeved at the state of affairs here with the fact that we had these religions, as you say, as this material says, are not the real truth and are causing us problems and will cause us even more conflict in future. They got so peeved that they had to come here and do something about it, and they picked this man, Billy Meyer, to be a conduit for this information. Have I got that right? I'm trying to unpick this at every point if I can.
Surely. Well, as I've explained it so far, there's a gap between some of this, but you're kind of getting that, because that's the way I've presented it. But let's say that it's not so much just that they were peeved, but that this motivation is to rectify, help us help ourselves to rectify a tremendous imbalance in our human development, and that as more advanced beings, they are in a sense, to some degree, duty-bound to assist without interfering, without enforcing, without doing something for us that we will have to do ourselves. Now, here's what the missing links, so to speak, and that is as follows. What we're told and taught in the Meyer material is, indeed, there was a prophet named Emmanuel, and we do know who he was, except that his name was changed and his life story somewhat falsified, and we have come to know him as Jesus Christ, a person that the Pleiaren, these extraterrestrials who are we say are in touch with Meyer, a person who actually never existed, that the man Emmanuel lived that life, was crucified, and though he survived the crucifixion, he went on with some members of his family and a couple of the people and ended up in India. And interestingly enough, in Srinagar, India, there are two tombs in that area, one for Mary and one for Isa, a great teacher who was crucified in his own country and came here to teach us. At the base of the tomb, outlines of two human feet with holes in the middle from indicating that nail had been driven into the feet. So this is a plot that thickens, as you're probably getting the idea. Now, there's also here in the Meyer case, Meyer turns out to be the co-discoverer, along with a former Greek Orthodox priest, of very ancient scrolls in an equally ancient tomb on the outskirts of Jerusalem, which end up being translated first into German, then into English. And that comes to be known as the Talmud Emmanuel, which bears an interesting similarity to the book of Matthew. And because of that, attracted the attention of a retired professor from Oregon State here named James Dierdorf, who went out to debunk it. And a year or two later, after doing his research, came to the conclusion that the Talmud Emmanuel was the original writing of a man upon whose life the character of Jesus was based, and the book of Matthew was a derivative of it and not the other way around. As you can imagine, this is provokes a bit of fuel for fire.
Well, I'm letting you talk, but I'm amazed that in the United States, where you have a lot of fundamentalists and people who have very, very entrenched views, I'm amazed that you can even say this and stay reasonably safe, because you are challenging the basis, the fundaments of people's religion here, aren't you?
I would say that in having looked at this myself over the past 31 years, and only, the Talmud was only relatively recently published, but looking at all the Meyer material I possibly could, I've come to the conclusion that the way this is wired is not for some very, as we can tell, convenient and easy means of establishing, oh, well, Billy Meyer's telling the truth, and there's more that I haven't, said here yet, but up to this point, that he's telling the truth, and it's this way, and it's not that way, and all the religions are false, thank you very much. No, that isn't going to happen with the majority of people at this time that come upon this material. So here's how I see it wired up. I speak about the prophetic predictive material in the Meyer case, I include in that simply that they've given him information about things in the direct form of prophecies and predictions, as well as simply conversationally. On my website, I have put up a number of different articles and a whole section for prophecies and predictions, but a number of different articles even on the homepage, where I and other people who've been doing research or have simply come upon information have found that science today and for some time now is specifically corroborating things written and published by Meyer up to more than 50 years ago.
We still haven't got to the subject of who is Billy Meyer. We've tried to talk around the why pick Billy Meyer for this kind of stuff.
Right.
But connected with that, I think very fundamentally and umbilically is, who is this guy?
All right. So where we left off was with Emmanuel. The material says Emmanuel was the fifth prophet in this lineage. The powers that be, the groups that were responsible for trying to give us this assistance, one day said, well, we've got one more shot at this. Let's not get a guy who's so charismatic he's going to get nailed up. I know. How about a pot-bellied, gray-bearded, one-armed Swiss farmer by the time he's discovered?
Now, listen, you forgive me for laughing about that, but no. That sounds so damned improbable.
Yes.
But then improbable things in this world sometimes happen, so who am I to say that can't be true?
Well, again, that's, and even though it may, as I say, this may be, that's my version of how they decided it'll be this Billy Meyer guy.
But it almost sounds like the life of Brian, it sounds like the life of Brian.
I mean, it could be. And the other part of it is, of course, that this man, despite the fact that he has, as he is now more known during these years than he was earlier in his life when he was leading some very amazing adventures as well. But he is the survivor of 21 attacks on his life to date.
Well, I think that's hardly surprising given some of this material. My God.
Exactly. So what it is all the time, every time, these prophets, these people, are only ordinary human beings. And that even means Emmanuel, who got changed into the deity Jesus Christ, or Muhammad, who has been deified and also vilified as, the founder of yet another religion, which was foretold, but another matter. So Meyer is simply the human being who has been prepared from a very early age to do a particular specific task, which will largely in his lifetime be thankless and in many senses, but which will, we are told in this case, bear fruit in the centuries to come.
That's convenient, isn't it? Because he's not going to be around to see whether he was right or not.
Well, I guess the joke is he will be, but it won't be him, because we're never the same personality. And ultimately, if this thing has been crafted well enough, and if enough work has been done during this formative, groundbreaking and fertilizing time, ultimately this development, this thing will fulfill itself and the purpose for the betterment of humankind, which is really what it's all about, will be fulfilled and manifest. And it's just that it's going to take quite a bit of time, because we have had so many, literally thousands of years of degeneration and war and aggression and just all the horrors that humans could possibly, heap upon themselves and each other, have always been done to the limits of the technology available. And unfortunately today we have even greater technologies available, and trying to keep a lid on these things so that we don't have to go through the worst of all foretold things is also part of the current work of Meyer and those involved with him.
Before we get into that, the question you must have heard a million times before as you've done interviews like this one. Nice to talk to you. Why can't I talk to Billy Meyer? Why isn't he on television? Why isn't he doing interviews? Why does he keep a low profile? I know you said he's had threats on his life, and I can quite see why that might be. But he could find ways of appearing, couldn't he?
Well, let me start backwards from the top. No, he hasn't had just threats in his life, 21 actual assassination attempts. People with rifles, handguns, knives, axes, the cutting of brake lines on cars, attempts to kidnap his children at knife point. I've spoken to witnesses to at least one dozen attempts. I've seen one of the bullet holes for myself when I was in Switzerland. Let's back it up and say that in the earlier days of – in the early – mid-70s, when he first started having these contacts, and actually a little bit before, he had done a little bit of going around in Europe, just a little, to try and make presentations. He was attacked then, and attacked – the greatest attacks, by the way, have come from UFO groups. I mean, apart from assassins and the government and disinformation, the biggest enemies of the truth about UFOs are none other than the UFO groups such as Exopolitics, in the past MUFON, although MUFON has opened up a little bit about this. And I say that having a good deal of experience with people in Exopolitics and other UFO groups, and I say it for another reason. If what I'm telling you is true, we are talking about the most important story in all of human history. If what I'm telling you is true. If what I'm telling you is not true, we're talking about the biggest and most impenetrable hoax that has been going on, perpetrated by one-armed man for the better part of 50-some years, almost 60 years. And that means that this one person has produced five or six categories of still irreproducible physical evidence, photos, films, videos, sound recordings, metal samples, that he has published 26,000 plus.
Michael, where are these pieces of physical evidence? Where can I see those?
Okay.
Where are they?
What remains of it, of course, now are simply the photographs and films that are, some of which are on my website, can be seen on other sites, are in some DVDs and things that we have, are in books. The metal samples, long ago they were presented to IBM, to Marcel Vogel, who did a videotaped analysis of them and determined that they were beyond his own technological ability to produce. He was a multi-patent holding scientist at IBM, a genius. The sound recordings can be downloaded off of my website, and you can try to test them and scope them out. We carry an extended version, 26 minutes of the sounds on a CD on the website somewhere. The physical evidence was also analyzed using equipment and personnel from some of the top laboratories in the world, NASA, JPL, etc. There's a free report you can download from my site. You can freely download the sound analysis report. Let's remember that this physical evidence, all the original stuff, was mainly presented to the investigators right around or before 1980. That's, we're going back a ways here, 30 years.
You say presented to the investigators, do you mean given to them in perpetuity, lent to them, shown to them? What do we say here?
Given to them for analysis so that they could take the metal, so they could take the sound recordings, so they could take photographs.
And does Billy Meyer have this stuff now?
Meyer still, of course, has tons of photos. I don't know that he even has originals left anymore.
Because it would sound to a lot of people very, very convenient. And I have to say, I might agree with some of those people, unless I get evidence to the contrary, that this material, which may have been presented to various investigators, is not around somewhere where I can go and see it. You know, if I could have a secret meet with Billy Meyer, there's nothing much he can show me apart from photos.
Well, let's back it up and let's look at it a bit fairly. About 98% of history is no longer accessible to you or I to test. We certainly can read about it. We can see ruins of things in some but not all cases. But the original material...
No, I totally understand what you're saying. But if this stuff is so earth-shattering, and if it is so correct and on the money every time, then surely we need to have some physical proof. And surely the beings who are servicing Billy Meyer with this information can say, okay, maybe at the beginning of this year they might have said, we need to tell you there's going to be an enormous oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. There is the potential for some kind of environmental cataclysm here, and you need to get doing something about this. Or even just tell him in private, and he can find a way of keeping that under wraps and then bring that prophecy out. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Then we would know absolutely that this is all true.
Well, actually, it's all been done long ago. Now, maybe not in some of the specifics that, you know, a lot of people could say, well, what about this or that? But let me explain. Meyer's transcripts from 1975 to 78, and this is why I think it's even more important than the UFO evidence. I mean, I can certainly explain to you why all the testing and everything else is quite valid, because it was done. I mean, JPL, NASA, USGS, top-level people whose names we know in special effects in the space industry, they've all caught. There are people who've gone on record about this. And again, this is freely available on my site. But let me.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. And if it is all to be believed, well, then it is, as you've rightly said, you know, it is the most amazing thing in any of our lives for as many years ahead as we can see into the future. The problem is that there's nothing here to see right now. If there was here to see right now, then surely this would be all over the front pages of every newspaper, because none of us as journalists could possibly ignore it.
Well, I'm going to tell you that...
I'm sorry if I'm interrupting you, but these are points that people are going to make to me in email, so I need to get them in there. Okay.
No, but you're right to raise them, and that's why I want you to know this, and I want to be very clear when I tell you the following. There are ebooks right now, as well as physical books, published dated documents that contain information that was published verifiably prior to the events occurring. I'm telling you, this is why, let me just say this, this is why I consider the prophetically accurate information to be even more important than all the UFO photos and everything else, because...
Well, I'm with you there on that, absolutely.
Right? So, and you know, I know we're not looking at, 6 hours right now, and we can... Listen, I will be available to you to go through all the steps of this, even in subsequent opportunities, should you wish, because I want you. You sound like a journalist to me, not just a news reporter. So you sound like somebody who understands what I'm driving at, and I want to make sure I drive this puppy home for you. So let me state the following. Let me give you just, for instance, an example. I'm going to jump to one that is kind of a little bit odd. But it's typical of how Meyer's information is so vast in its scope, what it covers. On my site, I have an area of prophecies and predictions, and there's one headline that says, 5,100-year-old Iceman proves Meyer UFO contact case true. Mm-hmm. Now, what on earth am I talking about, right?
No, well, if this is the Iceman they found, where was it, in Austria or something? But please go on. Okay.
All right, you know about it. So, what happens is Meyer has.
This is Ötzi, isn't it? This is that.
That's right.
Carry
that's
on. Sorry.
Exactly right. So, in May of 1991, in a conversation about many things, Meyer is told that the next thing will happen in the Ötzal Mountains on this Similaun Glacier, where they're going to find a mummified remains, a corpse of a man who lived 5,105 years ago from 1991, that is. And this is going to happen, and there's some more information which I'm going to come back to here because you'll see the payoff on this. And they said to him, you know, this will be sometime in the fall or something, August or September. They're going to find him, and they tell a little bit about who this man was and where he lived and all this stuff. Okay, that's very nice. Well, turns out that then in, what was it, maybe September, this discovery is made. Oh, well, that's very convenient. Did Meyer go back in and backdate something? Well, no. There is a publication from Meyer. Oh, gosh, it's dated 1996. Well, maybe he went back and postdated. Well, now let's tie it up together. Yes, they discover the mummy in 91 when Meyer claims he first published this document, right? But they did not until 2001 take the mummy into a hospital in Italy and run a CAT scan on it to determine what killed him, right? That was 10 years after the discovery and at least 5 years after Meyer has published the entire transcript. Well, let's go to the payoff here. They found out that this man was killed because there was an arrowhead in his back, and they concluded, logically, that he had been shot by somebody else with an arrow. Huh.
Well, that was the thing that made all the newspaper headlines and a TV documentary here in the UK, that this guy was murdered.
Right, except here is the same transcript, unaltered, from 1991, that is in a published book from Figu, 1995 or 6. What did I say? Let me just make sure I'm not fudging that.
96, you said.
Yes, 1996, 5 years before discovery. Let's see what he says here about how he died, shall we? Let's see. I'm going to tell you rather than try to read it all to you, unless I fall upon it, when I probably will. What the Playaren told him is that this man fell, had an epileptic seizure, and he fell from a kind of high point. They were observing a fight between some other people. When he fell, he landed on his back, and an arrow of his entered his back. He died because he had a concussion and the arrow in his back. As they say, one of the arrows that he had taken from one of the dead ones pierced his body, and he was left to his fate by his companions. An unlucky fall.
Accidental death.
Right, but he fell on an arrow. Now, this is published 5 years before they take this guy in to CAT scan him. Now, we're talking about the possibility 5,100 and some years ago that a man could die from frostbite, being attacked by a wild animal, starving to death, poisonous food, being killed by a spear, an avalanche. It goes on and on. But no, they tell him one of the arrows that he had taken from the dead ones pierced his body. He lost his life through an unlucky fall because of an epileptic fit. So he had taken an arrow, and then he had a fit, and he fell, and the arrow pierced his back. Now,
a remarkable chain of circumstances, by the sounds of it.
A remarkable chain of circumstances, kind of like can happen in, I guess, real life, even 5,000 years ago.
Sure.
But when I had first questioned this, a friend of mine wrote me, and he says, well, Meyer, they are right. And I said, well, how do you know they're right? He said, it's very simple. This man died 5,000 years ago, and it's indisputable that it was an arrowhead that caused his death, right? I said, yes. He says, you have to understand that even in more recent times, primitive or relatively primitive people that fashion their tools and weapons painstakingly out of, you know, stones, hard stones, or even when they can, metal or what have you, do not leave them in the dead animal or person if they can possibly help it. Had he been slain, had he been shot in the back by someone, the killer would have come over and yanked that arrow out to use it again. But the explanation, published 5 years before they even knew how this man died, makes perfect sense. He fell on it. There was nobody who did it to him. But indeed, it was the means of his death.
Now, all right, I'm going to tell you, I think that is a fantastic story and a very credible explanation for something that a lot of us have read about in the color supplements, as we call them here, seen on television. Yes. Great. Because, as I say, time is always short, frustratingly so, on things like this. I suppose I can hear people who are going to email me saying even now, why doesn't this man tell me something that I can use today? Something to do with the stock market, something to do with, democracy, stability of it, something to do with, the next terrorist attack, you know, something. Sure. I can use now.
Well, in that case, why don't we just take a quick little dip into something that Meyer had published it was ignored, among other things. And I'm just going to jump into something where he says, I'm in the middle of a statement, in contrast, in Iraq, a war will be led through the United States of America through their country's president. However, this will be without success, for which reason one of his sons, who will likewise be the USA's head of power, will, in the third millennium, unleash a second war in Iraq, which will ultimately lead to an unbelievable disaster and to torturing, as well as to mass murder through U.S. armed forces and the rebellious. Well,
that's pretty damn specific. We know what that is. When was that told?
1958.
Really? And is that verifiable? How do we verify that?
This one is harder, and I'm going to give you the answer, because this was a letter that contains 162 specific things, including naming AIDS by name as a coming epidemic, that people would do their transactions with plastic credit cards, that there would be two planets beyond Pluto discovered, that there would be in every home the television and computers would be interconnected electronically around the world, that terrorists would be hiding around the world in kind of, you know, what we've come to know as sleeper cells, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
This was in 1958, when I think the first huge computer was at a university in Manchester in England. It filled an entire room. So
yeah,
if that really was 1958, how could they have known that?
Right. So, but now the very legitimate question, well, where's the original letter on this one? Well,
yeah,
unfortunately, the original letter on this one is no longer around. Oh, well
again, that's pretty damn convenient then, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's real convenient. Well, here's how I answer that one, and I answer some of the other ones where the prophecies and predictions, which were claimed to be published, let's say, in the 80s, and all, if there is no longer an original, and there is originals, by the way, on tons of this stuff.
All right, but if this piece of, if this evidence is missing, that's a huge hole in the whole case of Billy Meyer, isn't it?
Well, no, and I'll tell you why. Two reasons. One, and I'll come back to reason one, which is the great body of stuff where we've got it, published, copyrighted books, texts, and how I found out about the validity of this case. I'll come back to that. Number two, documents like this, and Meyer has other documents from 51, 64, etc., where these were sent out with the help of teachers and other people. You know, there's a chain, but we may not any longer have the original. Here's how you will know eventually whether this was true or not. Because it foretells things that are coming that have not yet occurred. If these events occur, which are pretty industrial strength, will then unfortunately have the proof on these. However, let me go back to what I just said to you about how I knew this case was real and true from documented published material. I first got 1,800 pages of Meyer's transcripts in these conversations in 1986. I was given them by a man who was a retired IRS agent in Los Angeles. I'm going to try and hit this before the time is up so you'll understand what I'm really driving at here. There was a whole bunch of interesting information. It took me months to read it. I stuck it under the bed. In 1988, I opened up a newspaper, and I have that clipping still, and I've posted it in DVDs and everything else, and it reads, A-bomb testing tied to ozone damage. Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, big lab here in California. Wow, they've just concluded a big discovery. The ozone damage is tied into atmospheric atomic testing, explosion of A-bombs, etc. And as I read it, I said, how come I already know this right down to the percentages they're talking about? Why do I know this? And I reached under the bed to the first 100 pages that I had been given in these 18 100-page blocks, and I leafed through it, and in less than a minute, I found the first mention in there where they are giving Meyer in 1975 this information, and where he will later in there say, oh, yes, I remember as I was first told in 1951. And there it is, the A-bomb testing tied to the ozone damage.
But well, back then when this information was first given, we had an opportunity to do something about these things. Now, of course, if that damage has been done in that way, well, you know, too late now for the planet. Wouldn't it have been nice if we as a civilization could have acted on this information? And, you know, where was it at the time when it was handed over? Who was told about it?
Well, there, in the case of the of Meyer's, Meyer put out a letter in 1951 warning of unnatural climate change and a whole bunch of other stuff. It was sent to, I think, 3,000 different people around the world. Also, the Pleiaren gave Meyer the name of a scientist, I think his name was Michael McElroy at Harvard, to whom he should send the information on the atomic testing and stuff. He did. He never heard back from him. Nobody would respond to this guy. This is why I say to you that the UFO community has been the biggest enemy of the truth in our lifetime about this. They have deliberately ignored, suppressed, and attacked the Meyer case because they cannot make a buck off of it, because it contains everything that they claim to be interested in, that any reasonable human being wants to know.
Now, all right, you're saying that they want to make a buck out of this stuff, but your critics are bound to say, and again, here come some more emails to me. I can even, you know, I can almost read them now, and this thing hasn't even gone online yet.
Yeah.
They're going to be accusing you of making a buck out of this. This is the most fascinating story of all. This is the most eyebrow-raising stuff. And, you know,
you must
be making money out of it.
Well, let me answer.
Are you?
Well, I'm gonna give you this answer. There's a yes and no. I drew up a contract with Billy Meyer. I did all this research on my own, by the way, from 79 when I first got this stuff. I just did all this on my own.
Why?
And
why did you do it?
It fascinated me. So let's fast forward just because of time to 2004. I had already, since 1988, on my own dime, given lectures on this and done radio interviews and all sorts of stuff. So in 2004, I went to Billy and I said, I want to officially represent you. And that means I want to publish your information as you approve of it, being as long as several conditions are met. One, I have the right to disagree or to say that I don't know, if it should be the case. And I have, by the way, on both accounts. And number two, most importantly, in this category would be, I will do this for free, and you will not pay me to represent you, and I will not pay you, so that there is nothing there.
All
however,
right. So no however, money, you say, is changing right. hands anywhere down the track.
But there, where money changes hands here, if I get hired to speak, or if I, on my own dime, produce a film or a DVD and sell it so that I can keep my work going, because I happen to, at this point in my life, I'm beyond retirement age. I don't get a lot out of that. I've been self-employed all my life. I'm a scrapper, but I want to keep this clean. So it's not against any laws or moral laws to support yourself and to be able to sell something that you yourself have produced or someone else has that you think is of value. But I will load my website. I will load it with every free possible text I can and link to people who've done the same thing.
Well, listen,
so therefore,
I don't have a problem with any of this because everybody has a right to support themselves, as you say.
Exactly.
So I don't have a beef with that at all. Okay, because time again is limited and we're going to have to come back and do more about this in the future, because it is fascinating. It is controversial. Boy, I have a feeling I'm going to get more response about this than anything else I've ever done. But, you know, bring it on. That's all right. I used to work with a guy. Let's just go down a little do you have cul-de-sacs in America? A little side alley here. All right, let's go down a little cul-de-sac here. I used to work with one of the finest talk show hosts in the UK, a guy called Mike Dickin. Sadly, he's no longer with us. He was killed in a car crash a few years ago, and we all still miss him. Big man, big voice. You didn't mess with this guy. I used to do this Unexplained show just before him on national radio across the UK. Wow. And sometimes I'd have people who would give prophecies and foretell things and all sorts of stuff. And we'd leave a million questions hanging in the air before the end of every show. And Mike and I would always have to do a little handover. I would hand over to him. He'd be doing the late show, the late night, lights down talk show right across the nation. I'd be his warm-up act. And we'd be doing our little two-way here. And he would say, well, I'm very interested to hear that you had that man predicting so-and-so. But I bet he can't tell me one thing. And I'd say, okay, I know what's coming. I'd say, Mike, what's the one thing he can't tell me? Who's going to win the 3:30 horse race at Kemptown? And that's the fact, isn't it? We come back to the point that I want something that I can use. I want Billy Meyer and the people, the beings feeding him, to give me the national lottery numbers here, to tell me how long this coalition government we've got in the UK is going to last. Or to perhaps have predicted the downfall of the guy or the stepping down of the guy who ran BP because of the great disaster there. Stuff that I can use practically. And once that stuff I get, then I can go some of the way to starting to perhaps believe some of the rest of it.
Sure. Well, let me put it to you this way. If the people that Meyer is dealing with are indeed as smart as I hope they are, their particular approach should bear fruit among those who are willing to do just a little bit of scrapping. Now, that having been said, they are not interested in our materialistic concerns vis-a-vis how much money we make or don't make. As a matter of fact, they think we're a little overly focused on that, despite the fact that we all would like to, win the lotto or whatever. They have consistently published, and we can verify that they have, sufficient information. I'm going to be sending you links to tons of stuff so you'll have a little easier way of, going about it, that can verify that they've been warning about very specific things. Now, I'll tell you this. There is a warning, a specific warning on two events that they will not give the dates for because, again, this is not hand-holding. It's like, here's the information. And here is the information. There will be a 9.0 earthquake off the coast of Portland, Oregon at some point, and they won't say when, that will run at 9.0 for 5 straight minutes.
All right, well, 5 minutes of 9.0, that's going to wipe out an awful lot.
Well, you're on it. It's a sea quake, but nonetheless, that's very powerful. It will generate a tsunami.
Tsunami, yeah.
That is going to slam that part of the West Coast. It will then produce another earthquake and tsunami. It will be devastating to that area and to people in that area. They have said, and now this was told to Meyer several years ago, about 2 years prior, documented, verifiable, prior to our scientists now coming up with the same conclusion. They have also said, I think it's called El Cumbre Volcano in the Canary Islands, is going to erupt for sure, unless there is a way we could prevent some of the damage, but it will erupt. And when it does, 1 trillion tons of mass are going to go into the sea suddenly, generating a tidal wave tsunami, not only that will rush up the coasts of Spain, Portugal, and France, but which will cream the entire eastern seaboard of the United States and penetrate up to 12 kilometers inland and potentially take out 20 million human lives. They will not tell us when. They will simply tell us that this event will happen.
All right,
now,
well, let's take that specific example then of the volcano on the Canary Islands. I don't understand why they wouldn't want to tell us when, because having this information in inverted commas, what the hell are we going to do with it? We can't stop a volcano erupting, can we?
Right. What we can do, and what they said we should do with it, especially here, is that they said it is the responsibility of your government and your scientists to prepare routes for evacuation and means of getting people out, because when that goes, when the sign that that's going, that will give 7 to 8 hours or so of time, I guess it is, before that wave would cross the Atlantic. So if we have a warning, folks, it's now time for Plan B. Here we go.
All right. Our time is just about out, and I could do another hour with you really, really easily, probably another 3 hours with you really easily, Michael. I've enjoyed this. But Billy Meyer gets told this information. Shouldn't the powers that be, the beings who told him this, this is really seismic stuff, quite literally. 20 million yes. people you're talking about perishing at some date we don't know. Why didn't they go to the United Nations with this? You know, cut out the middleman, deal direct. That's the bit I don't understand. You don't have very long to answer this question, and I'm sorry for that.
I'll give you the answer this way. In 1979, the Pleiaren authorized contact with the Carter administration of the United States. A letter was drafted by Billy Meyer, given to the lead investigators, and presented to people in the Carter administration. The offer was turned down.
Well, that's no big surprise. A letter, that's no good, is it? They need to appear to Jimmy Carter himself.
Well, you have to know that the CIA has been monitoring from day one. And the part of the story that hopefully we can do another one.
How do you know that, by the way?
Because the lead investigator, retired Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, U.S. Air Force, and Lee and Britt Elders, who were the skeptic owners of Intercept, a high-level electro-counter-espionage company, who went with Wendell Stevens to Switzerland to start the investigation of the Meyer case in 78 to prevent him from being taken in by a hoax. And all three of them ultimately came away not only knowing that this was no hoax, but having to account to the CIA each trip in and out of London on their way to Zurich. Mm. And we have this in public, we recorded, you know, presentation from Wendell Stevens and everything. You've just pulled a thread on a sweater here, my friend.
In Los Angeles, that was Billy Meyer's representative, Michael Horn. Now, I don't expect you to buy into any of that. I don't know what to make of it. It is either, as I said, the biggest hoax there has ever been or something truly amazing. And I really don't know which. And it's not my business to make that judgment right now. It's your business to judge about it. An idea has suggested itself to me in the last couple of minutes, just as I'm saying these words, really. How about, because this is so damn controversial, if you have questions for that man, if there are things that I didn't say to him, you think I should have said to him, why don't you email me with your questions for that man, and at some point in the future, I'll get Michael Horn back on and we can ask him the hard questions. He's told me off air that he is willing to defend this work and he can answer any question. Well, let's give him that opportunity. Let's ask him the hard questions. It is something that is either so far-fetched it is ridiculous, or it is something that all our governments need to be paying attention to, and maybe they are on some level. And I'm just a journalist. I'm just an honest broker in all of this. I don't know the answer to that question. Thank you very much for listening to The Unexplained. Please keep the donations coming. Keep your email response coming. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for getting the show out to you, to Martin for the theme tune as usual, and to you for listening to The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been Edition 40. We will return soon. Take care.